This is the Meridian Podcast. It's been an explosive couple of weeks in British politics.
Last Thursday morning, after just 45 days in office, Liz Truss announced her resignation on the steps of Downing Street.
I recognise, though, given the situation, I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
At 45 days, Truss's time in Number 10 is the shortest of any Prime Minister.
In that time, Liz Truss announced a disastrous and uncosted mini-budget with a raft of tax cuts, almost immediately crashing both the pound and her party's ratings in the polls.
Good morning. I have just been to Buckingham Palace and accepted His Majesty the King's invitation to form a government in his name.
This week, as the third Prime Minister in just 3 months, Rishi Sunak enters Number 10 at a time of crisis for the Conservative Party and the country at large, with the cost of living and energy bills soaring while his party's popularity plummets.
On today's episode, with a panel of student journalists and party activists, we'll be discussing how we got here and where we're headed next.
I'm Amelia Hardy.
I'm Michael Gorhan.
And welcome to the Meridian Podcast.
So welcome back to the Meridian Podcast. It's great to be back, and we have a brilliant panel of guests joining us this week to discuss what I think we can all agree has been a very chaotic couple of weeks, if not months, for British politics. And on today's show, we're joined by student journalists and party activists from both Labour and the Conservatives. So we should have a real balance of voices on today's episode. But before we do get into today's episode, we'll start with some introductions, starting with our two student journalists, Jacob and Oliver. Oliver, if you wouldn't mind starting, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Oliver, or Ollie. I'm the deputy editor of Cherwell at Oxford, which is the main student newspaper here at Oxford. And I head up the comment section, which is where we get most of our political stuff in. And yeah, I'm studying Spanish and always willing to chat politics, whether on podcasts or not.
Excellent. What about yourself, Jacob?
So my name is Jacob. I'm originally from Exeter. I'm politics editor at Palatinate, have been for about 3 months now. I study liberal arts at Durham. Our politics section kind of tries to encompass three main sections, with a sort of student politics, local politics, and national and international politics. So we do enjoy engaging with a wide variety of political news, but yeah, always like Ollie, very keen to discuss politics.
Absolutely, as we all are. And now for our I should say party political, I suppose, individual. So if you don't mind, we'll start with you, Finlay. If you could just talk a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm Finlay. I'm from the Wirral, and I'm now the chair of Wirral Young Labour. In May as well, I also stood as a council candidate on the Wirral. When I was at university, I studied music and then did a master's in international business. And now when I'm not working in politics, I am a musician and a music teacher. And yeah, it's lovely to be on. So thank you very much for having me.
No worries at all. Fabulous. And now Nathan.
Hi, thanks very much for having me on the show. My name is Nathan Eckersley. I am the Young Conservatives Officer for Greater Manchester. So within that role, it's my job to support and develop individual Young Conservatives branches across the 10 boroughs of Greater Manchester. And as well as that, I run Tameside Young Conservatives as well, again, for one of the Greater Manchester boroughs. Away from my role within the Conservative Party, I'm studying for a master's degree in history at Manchester University, and I'm also a presenter on Wizard Radio Station, covering with a politics programme.
Sounds great. Sounds great. So the first sort of question as an icebreaker that I'd like to try and ask everyone is, of course, as we were saying before, it's been such a chaotic period. There's been three prime ministers in as many months. If you had one word to describe the last few weeks, what would that be and why? And we'll start with, I think we'll go straight for Finlay, if you don't mind, from your perspective. What would that word be and why?
Exhausting. Because it really feels like the drama that's going on with the Conservative Party is the kind of drama that should be done in opposition, not in government. They're making the country bear the brunt of their inability to make good decisions and to make a decision full stop, really. What that means, of course, is uncertainty around energy bills, uncertainty around mortgages, uncertainty about the entire state of the economy. And that is just not right. And I, as somebody who I'm naturally follow politics closely, I'm just tired of it. So I can't even imagine what it's like to be somebody who just doesn't follow politics that closely, but keeps on seeing all these changes happening.
Yeah, understood. And Nathan, what would your one word be and why?
Well, I suppose the obvious word would be divisive. Yeah, as a party, this is a hugely, hugely challenging time for us. As you quite rightly point out, we've had three different leaders and so subsequently prime ministers in as many months. But in addition to that, it's a strain that gets put onto the grassroots members as well. You know, we've just had this lengthy leadership contest over the summer spanning 8 weeks in which the not just members of parliament, but also normal grassroots party members have essentially had to divide themselves. You know, were they Sunak supporters or Truss supporters? Now, to declare an interest, I was a Truss supporter. I voted for her. I really, truly believed in her policy program, which I'm sure we can get into later in the podcast. But, you know, we've gone through this really divisive time throughout the country and within the party. And within that, there's a lot of division about whether or not Rishi Sunak is the right leader, especially because Liz Truss had an overall majority within the members' vote. But also there's a lot of tension as well in the fact that, you know, the MPs deposed a leader and then we were foisted with the second choice, if you like. So it's definitely been a difficult time and without question divisive for the party.
Yeah, so divisive and exhausting, two great words to describe it. Now over to the student journalists. Independently, if you remove yourselves from your own sort of beliefs politically, how would you describe what the last few weeks and months have been like in one word? I will start with Oliver. Sorry, go on.
I think for me, depressing is probably the word for a lot of reasons. And if I am obviously removing my political beliefs from it, just in a sense that we've had this over the summer, we had this incredibly prolonged leadership contest, and then we've had Liz Truss, and things have obviously, you know, that's more than made the situation worse, and then more delay. And I think for me the most depressing thing has been seeing, with all this chaos going on politically, just how bad the situation has been getting and progressively getting for ordinary people. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about politics, and as we are all fascinated by politics and into it, we'll be spend our days listening to politics and engage in the drama of Westminster. But at the end of the day, we forget that mortgage rates are going up by, you know, over 200%, and you look at the plight, the inflation statistics, and it's truly terrifying for a lot of people. And that, partnered with how we now look on the world stage, I think for me it's quite hard to fathom how far we've fallen in such a small space of time.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that as well later in the podcast, sort of how this whole debacle has looked on the world stage. But finally, Jacob, what would your one word be and why?
Well, I've had a little think about it, and I've actually decided to go for shift, because I think this is one of those rare moments in British politics where there is a permanent shift in public opinion. I actually predicted on the first day of Liz Truss's premiership that she would lead the Tories into the next election and win. So I think that says a lot about my ability to be sensitive to political changes. But I think the thing is, the Tories have worked so hard to build up their reputation on economic competence, on sort of the party of strength and stability, however true that may or may not be. Certainly in the mind of voters, that was something that was true. I think when Liz Truss came to be Prime Minister, she was completely unequipped for the role. She didn't have the support of her MPs. She surrounded herself with yes men and people who operationally did not know how to govern. And I think that that's kind of responsible for all of the chaos that's ensued in the past 6 weeks or so. The reality is, you know, the Tories might kid themselves, but the public is watching. They're looking at mortgage rates, they're looking at inflation. And the reality is that this may be completely irretrievable for the Tories. And I certainly think that when you're trying to recover a 37-point poll deficit, I mean, how often do we see parties mid-term have a 37-point deficit in the polls and then go on to win? I mean, I was certainly of the belief before Liz Truss became Prime Minister that the Tories were gonna win again, that Starmer hadn't really cut through, that he was kind of dry and people weren't really into him. But I've definitely changed my mind now. And I'm very much of the view that there's a kind of real anger, palpable anger amongst the British public against the Tories, basically.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think drawing upon that point, Jacob, if you want to go first, we'll start off with our journalists on this question. What was it that went so wrong for Liz Truss? Was there a sort of metaphorical straw that broke the camel's back, or was it more a series of events? So from a journalistic perspective, what was it that went so wrong?
Oh God, where to start? You know, I'm not quite sure. I think I think she got her cabinet completely wrong because she just surrounded herself by her supporters. I mean, Boris kind of did the same thing, didn't he? He didn't want to get disposed of. So he put around him in all of the key cabinet positions, his supporters. And I think at a time when she didn't have very strong support within the Parliamentary Conservative Party, I think she only got, what was it, 100 or so something nominations in the first? I can't remember. It was never going to end well for her. You've got to draw on the talents of all of your party, and if you're trying to govern in a partisan way, I mean, the same thing happened to Corbyn, didn't he, really? I mean, I guess you could say a lot of the moderates didn't really want to serve under him, but so I would say that. I mean, I think the 45p thing, oh my God, I mean, how short-sighted can you be? I mean,
who were her advisors?
Who said that was a good idea? Like, seriously.
It's extraordinary. And I mean, I think that it's certainly from the offset with the way the leadership contest obviously works in our democracy, that's an inherent problem that she's obviously been put in there with. I mean, it's all well and good having the mandate from the tiny Conservative membership, but when you actually get to Downing Street, you need to have the support of MPs, or you can't command the government. So as you say, Jacob, I mean, that was an absolute nightmare. And then, I mean, the mini budget itself, bad enough. And then the disastrous way they dealt with the aftermath. I mean, it's like the stuff you couldn't make it up. Have different ministers sitting in different interviews saying different things, and yeah, we're going to scrap it. No, we're not going to. Yeah, we're absolutely going to push ahead. I mean, it's just been laughable. And I think that as Jacob was saying, the construction of the cabinet was obviously flawed from the start, because anyone with any experience or economic know-how was plain and simple not backing her policies, because they could see straight through them. I mean, economics is opinion to an extent, but there's a level where you get to facts and figures and things just don't add up. So I think that's also been really interesting, seeing people's reaction to Rishi Sunak's cabinet in the past couple of days, and how he's obviously trying to offer out olive branches to all wings. But also, above all, just going for that experience, because I think he's terrified of repeating the same mistakes.
Oh, they got the fracking thing, like, oh my God, if you had to identify a moment, like,
extraordinary.
it's unprecedented. The chief whip resigned and then unresigned. It was a three-line whip and then it wasn't, and then
I think that's actually the morning in British politics that I've been, I woke up that morning and I went for a run, and I was listening to a podcast, I can't remember which one, and I've never been more depressed about being, and more ashamed actually of being British. I think, you know, this is the stuff of, it's all well and good, the drama and the excitement, but that was, you know, when MPs are being physically manhandled just trying to carry out their democratic right. You know, this is the stuff of so-called third world countries that are on the brink of coup, and this stuff is happening in Parliament. You know, we meant to have, you know, be this beacon of democracy. And yeah, I mean, you just couldn't make it up. It's like something out of a film.
Nathan, obviously, as you mentioned previously, you were a supporter of Liz Truss initially. Looking back at all of the events and everything we've just talked about, what's your views on all of this?
Well, I mean, Oliver's quite right to point out that it was a pretty unedifying episode to see MPs being manhandled. And you know, I don't doubt for one moment that mistakes were made within the Truss ministry. But I do want to pick up on what Jacob was saying in that, you know, that Liz Truss wasn't suited to high office when, you know, that just simply isn't true. She's certainly got a wealth of ministerial experience. You know, she's been on the government front bench for the last 10 years. She's run, I believe, 6 government departments before becoming prime minister. So, you know, she's certainly had the experience going into the top position. And of course, prior to becoming prime minister, she was foreign secretary. But, you know, I do still fundamentally believe in what Truss was doing. You know, if I didn't, I wouldn't have voted for her, you know. So it was more the case that I was voting for the policy plan, you know, the policies that she wants to enact, this idea of so-called Trussonomics. You know, why wouldn't we want to be a high growth country? Why wouldn't we want to be a country that builds more houses, that increases our own energy security? And you know, I do have some reservations on a personal level about Rishi Sunak's plans. He's undoing everything that Truss wanted to do, more or less. But you know, I still have to stick by him. He is still my party leader, and yeah, you know, he's not even 2 days into the job, I don't think. So we do have to give him the benefit of the doubt. But if I was given the opportunity again, if they presented the same ballot to me tomorrow and asked me to vote, I would still vote for Liz Truss, because I really do truly believe in what she was trying to do in her economic plans. And I think it was just unfortunate that MPs couldn't respect the will of the party membership to get behind her. And frankly, I don't think that they gave her the opportunity to really try and bring something new, which is what the country needed, something bold and radical, frankly, to get out of this malaise that we've been having.
Jacob, did you want to jump in?
I just don't really understand where you're coming from, Nathan, because she was so grossly unprepared for the situation that she found herself in. I mean, surely you can't look at her premiership and think that is someone who knew it, had a clear sense of direction, who had a clear strategy and knew what she was trying to achieve, because it was just chaos. It was absolute chaos. You've got to have authority. You've got to have the ability to lead. You've got to have the ability to take people with you. And she didn't have any of that, surely.
She did at first. She did. When she came into office, she came in with this brand new plan. She'd introduced this huge energy package, which is the single largest state intervention into the economy since, I think even prior to the bailout of the banks as well. It was multi billions of pounds going into the energy sector. So, you know, she definitely came in with this authority, with a real sense of purpose. Her mistake was that U-turn at the party conference. And, you know, I was at the party conference, and it was fascinating, really, to be there to see this real divide within the party. Actually, it seemed to be much more that there seemed to be actually a regional divide, actually, and it was mimicked across MPs and party members. You know, those in the south seemed to prefer Rishi Sunak and what he was proposing during the leadership contest, whilst those in the more northern red wall areas tended to prefer what Truss was doing. From my perspective, anyway. And, you know, we can see that as well, partially reflected in the way MPs backed either candidates during the leadership contest. But her mistake was the U-turn. You know, there's no getting around that. Mistakes were made. She shouldn't have done it, from my view. And that U-turn so early on in her premiership really undermined her authority. And I think that's why it all started to crumble, because she did perform that U-turn. She reversed what was a core promise in her leadership campaign. That did undermine her authority. If she hadn't have U-turned, if she'd stuck by it and stuck by the mini budget, you know, Kwasi Kwarteng would still be Chancellor, she'd still be Prime Minister, we'd have weathered the storm and we'd be onto other issues. I firmly believe that.
But doesn't that show how politically unprepared she was and how naive she was? That she, I mean, there was, you're right, she introduced this energy package, you know, I mean, of a scale people couldn't have even fathomed. She didn't need to rush through another mini budget before we had any any statistics from the banks. It was completely unnecessary. But I mean, also on another point, just looking at policy, I don't think anyone's here is arguing against growth and economic growth and building of houses. There's just times and ways to execute it. And Rishi Sunak is fundamentally, politically, barely, you know, he's not that far from Liz Truss's economic plan, but it's about a long term and doing things at the right time. You know, I'm not a massive Rishi Sunak fan by any means, but you've got to offer the markets and the banks some kind of stability. But Liz Truss to come in and make these, I mean, crazy economic decisions and make them feel like they're so rushed through without even any forecasts. I mean, to say that's not naive is surely just insane.
But that's just it. So just briefly on that point, you know, that's just it. You know, I said mistakes were made. You can't get away from that. And you know, I still stand by everything that was announced in the mini budget. The problem was she announced too much too quickly. If she'd staggered it over a number of announcements.
Do you stand by the tax cut? Sorry.
Yes. Yes, I do. I you know, tax cuts are fundamentally the right thing to do when the economy is so sluggish at the moment. You know, ensuring people are keeping as much of what they are earning as possible is absolutely the right thing. You know, the tax burden at the moment is at its highest point for 70 years. You know, so graduates, depending on how much they study or how far they take their university career and then enter the workforce, you know, some are handing over just shy of 50% of their earnings to the state. That's not right. And so all of Liz Truss's tax cuts, when you take it all into account, when you factor in everything, it would have taken the tax burden down to where it was in 2019.
But that is not in the cabinet that put those taxes up. She was pro the national insurance rise. She's been pro. Well, she voted for all of the tax changes that Rishi Sunak enacted. I appreciate as well the benefits to cutting the basic rate of income tax. But to cut the rate of tax, cut the 45% tax rate, and then act like that's going to be a big help for graduates seems dishonest, at the very least. And also jumping in an earlier point that you made, that it was interesting to see Northern members supporting Liz. I was out in Skem yesterday, a place where, you know, Liz Truss wanted to frack. I can promise you people there are not happy, and they weren't happy with any aspect of that original plan. The U-turns, the only frustration with the U-turns was the fact that they had to be part of this chaos. The whole plan from the beginning was not a plan that was really helping anybody outside of what, Conservative MPs, hedge fund bosses.
But the broader idea that Liz Truss was trying to introduce was the fact that that mini budget was the first part of something wider. I mean, as soon as she was announced she was going to do a mini budget, she then announced there's going to be another announcement to follow it in the November, and then obviously because of the market turmoil that got moved to October, and now Jeremy Hunt's moved the event back to November. So, you know, I think we do run the risk of losing the fact that there was a broader plan to what was being introduced. Yes, of course, the first mini budget went too far. You know, I completely accept that, and I'm not disagreeing there. But, you know, to say that it was some radical agenda, as many have made out, is just simply untrue, because, you know, when you look at the numbers, it just takes us back to where we were a couple of years ago in terms of tax burden.
Mm-hmm. Differences about the 45%, the top rate of tax being cut. We have Rishi Sunak now. He's now Prime Minister, the third one in 3 months. Do you feel now, Nathan, that Rishi Sunak taking over from Liz Truss, that this is the man for the job? I know you backed Liz Truss in the past, but many people think that Rishi Sunak is an improvement on Liz Truss. Would you agree with that?
I don't think the Conservative Party has any other choice but to back Rishi Sunak. You know, he is our leader at the end of the day. He's the person who is going to take us into that next general election whenever it comes. And so we have no choice but to support him, get behind him, because at the end of the day, everyone needs Rishi Sunak to succeed because of the state of the economy at the moment. You know, we've got a leader who's proposing a much more cautious plan now. And, you know, whilst I do still believe there should have been a bit more ambition with the economy, as Liz Truss was trying to introduce, you know, caution is an equally responsible measure to take. And I'm not fully sure about where he's going to go with this. It'll all be announced in the fiscal statements on the 17th of November. But generally, I think we just have to back Rishi Sunak, because, you know, if he fails, we all fail, really.
Mm-mm. Jacob, you wanted to jump in.
I think we should kind of guard against idolising Rishi Sunak as some sort of saviour of for the Tories in their current kind of predicament. I certainly think he's much more capable of commanding authority within the parliamentary Conservative Party. But I also think, contrary to that, he's kind of more error-prone than people think. I mean, he kept on banging on about sort of integrity and professionalism, and that kind of seems to be a little bit inconsistent with the reappointment of Suella Braverman. He's got in loads of trouble before with the green card stuff. I mean, how naive have you got to be to let that happen? He got fined for Partygate. I think perhaps the most understated thing, he actually managed to lose to Liz Truss. He managed to demonstrate in the course of the Tory leadership campaign less political wherewithal than Liz Truss. I mean, I don't know how that hasn't attracted more attention. I mean, I think he's a smooth communicator. I think he's much better on the media than Truss is. I think in the sort of public facing aspects of the role, I think he'll do much better. I was very impressed with him at PMQs this week. I thought it was kind of a Cameron style put down performance. I thought he got the Tory backbenchers in much more of a sort of mood than they've been previously. I also think there's kind of this ongoing perception that Starmer and Sunak are very similar, and I don't really agree with that. I think Sunak's much more brash and much more loud and dominant. I've always kind of seen Keir as a more quiet, like reserved figure. But yeah, that's kind of my take on Sunak. So I would say overall, don't write him off just yet, but I don't think people in the Labour Party will necessarily be fearing him as much as they might have been 2.5 years ago. But yeah.
Interesting. Finlay, go on, you wanted to add to that.
I would agree with your last point there, particularly Jacob. No one in you know, the Labour circles that I'm in is particularly concerned. But of course, well, actually, some of us are kind of glad, because Liz Truss was just so chaotic. You didn't know what was coming around the corner. And I think that there is an unambiguous positive side to Rishi Sunak getting in, which is that we can at least sort of predict what's going to happen for the next week. And while I do disagree with you slightly, Jacob, about PMQs, which I thought his next lines were really hackneyed, I thought it was really funny that he mentioned 15,000 more police officers than the coalition was the bit in brackets that he didn't say, not Labour. Of course, we've still got fewer police officers than when Labour last left power. The problem I really have, I think this is part of the fact that we've had so much chaotic politics over the last few months, is that most people, I think, aren't paying that close attention to the nitty-gritty of the policies. What they're really concerned with is the implementation. And I just don't think that the Conservative Party has any capacity for implementation of big policy anymore. And they've basically traded it all away with having real dishonesty in their leadership around Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak, and then having complete chaos with Liz Truss. So I ask myself questions like, what does Rishi Sunak actually think about fracking? He said he's going to scrap it again, but actually what he thinks doesn't matter. I don't trust him at all. I don't. When he goes into the Commons and says to another MP from Yorkshire, we're going to recommit to our levelling up promises, I just don't believe him. Because why should I? They've traded in their capacity for the implementation of policies. And I think people are aware of that. And I think that's something to be really worried about. And it is the reason why I think a general election now, or, you know, soon, is the only viable course of action.
Well, I suppose that's the sort of million-pound question leading on from that is there a need now to call for a general election? So Oliver and Jacob, I know you're wanting to jump in. So if we start with both of you, what is it?
I just wanted to kind of push back on what Finlay said a little bit. I've always kind of found PMQs to kind of be a confirmation bias exercise. I don't think anyone has ever thought that the person that they're supporting has ever lost a match of PMQs. But I do generally agree with what you were saying. I think the kind of authority of the Conservative Party, the intellectual authority that they've given to British public life has kind of been diminished. And I think the really key thing for Labour is who do you trust, the opinion polls on who do you trust more on the economy? For the first time in years, we're seeing an absolutely clear Labour lead. And I think that that is probably an indication that Labour are in a very, very strong position for the next general election.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, unfortunately, I don't think we're gonna have a general election any sooner than we have to. I think it is true. I think Rishi Sunak, there was one small sort of slither of hope I had, and I thought that politically there was a chance Rishi could get up when he was elected and say, we're going to have an election maybe in 12 months' time or something like that, and sort of try and give a little bit back to the public and withhold some political capital as well, say we're going to get through a tough winter or something like that. I think now, realistically, we're stuffed for 2 years. But I think this is a really good point, that Rishi is going to struggle to really get any massive policies through government. I mean, we have to remember that there is still a large number of MPs who did not vote for him. And at the end of the day, you really need to be able to command that majority in Parliament to get anything substantial through. And when it comes around to election time, I mean, it is extraordinary when you think about where Labour have come from at the last general election to this point. To have this lead on the economy, as Jacob's saying, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. There's no way you could have predicted that after Corbyn. And how Starmer's managed, I think, finally, I don't think he's breaking through like a Tony Blair style, sort of, you know, everyone idealising him. But I think people are fed up of populist chaos. And I think people are looking for a bit of strength and stability. And I do agree with Jacob that I don't think Rishi Sunak offers that in quite the same way that Starmer does.
Yeah, just before I pass over to Finlay there, I just want to give Nathan an opportunity to respond, really. Lots of people have been calling for a general election. So the first question I'd like to ask is, what's your sort of response to that? But also, secondly, obviously, Rishi Sunak has inherited a party with mesmerisingly bad polling. I mean, some of the YouGov polls that have been coming out are absolutely devastating to the majority that Boris Johnson won. How does Rishi Sunak recover that?
Well, on the point about a general election, I don't think that we will have an election until probably May 2024 as projected, because, you know, the one constitutional requirement to be the Prime Minister is to command the confidence of the House of Commons. Well, as we saw over the last weekend, you know, Rishi Sunak now commands the confidence and support of well over half of the parliamentary party. And he's got a lot of work to do, and, you know, without question, in winning over the rest of those MPs who fully backed and supported Liz Truss and still hold doubts over what he's promising and what he's planning for the economy, amongst other issues. But, you know, because he has that overwhelming backing within the parliamentary party at the moment, I can't see him going to the public and going to the electorate and essentially putting that 70-seat majority it is now, putting that at risk, essentially. And, you know, even with a general election, the polling is showing clear Labour leads at the moment. And, you know, as it gets closer to polling day, there's a very good chance that those leads will close. It'll become a much closer election than people think. And that in turn will create uncertainty and instability within the markets and within the economy. So when we are in such a precarious position in the global economy as well, not just in our own, but when there is such a precarious position around the world, financially, economically, I don't think now is the right time to go to the general public to hold that general election. Give him time to actually implement the plans, correct the mistakes that have been made, and take it to the public when the election is scheduled for 2024.
Finlay, I can imagine you want to respond to that, but I also just wanted to add on that, on a point that Nathan made. Obviously, Labour are doing a lot better in the polls at the moment, but there is still a chance that there could be, it's looking like it will be a long time until the next general election. Do you think it's likely that Labour can actually hold on to this lead they've got in the polls? Is there anything they can do to capitalise on it?
And so I think the point that Nathan made there about if there was an election now, there'd be a narrowing in the polls would be true. I mean, a 37% lead is just, is an astonishing amount of support, which I think reflects a real, you know, distaste for Liz Truss, a real lack of confidence in what she was doing. But what's really interesting is if you look at polling companies like Opinion, which don't include Don't Knows in their voter intention, you're still seeing really quite large swings to Labour, especially swings of Conservative to Labour directly, not going through Don't Knows. Now, I'm not going to say that those are voters who are won over for good, but this is not a case in, for example, 2013 and 14, where Labour was leading in the polls, a bit more narrowly, but still leading, which was often to do with a collapse in Tory support, not really metastasising into actual Labour support. This is something different. There has to be, and there must be a sort of 97 election baseline here. That was about a 15-point lead in the end for Labour of support that I think has been won from the Tories. They're going to have to work really hard on getting back. But Nathan, I did want to pull you up on a couple of things that you mentioned. For one thing, you mentioned that the only constitutional requirement of being Prime Minister is having the confidence of the House of Commons, and then that Rishi Sunak has a confidence of more than half of Conservative MPs. That's only a third of the House. You know, when a general election happens, we sort of implicitly assume that the new PM is going to have the confidence of their party, given the majority in the House of Commons. But I just don't think that Rishi Sunak even has that, and which is kind of what you said. I'm also curious about your comments on elections, only because on your show on Sunday, you said, and I quote, "If Rishi Sunak does win next week and becomes our Prime Minister, he'll have no other choice but to call an election in order to try and give himself some sort of mandate." I'm just kind of wondering what's changed since Sunday in your mind.
Okay, I'll adjust the second point first and say that yes, I hold my hands up. I did say publicly that Rishi Sunak needs to call an election, and I have since changed my mind, and I'm fully prepared to admit to that because, yeah, at the time I will admit, you know, as a Liz Truss supporter, as a Conservative member, I was annoyed at the fact that, you know, there was a load of MPs who disagreed with the choice of the party membership and then decided to implement their first choice as Prime Minister and as leader. I was angry at that. I was annoyed. But, you know, having seen the way in which he has sort of stabilised the markets, having secured that majority within the parliamentary party and won over the confidence of many MPs, you know, I have changed my mind on that. I think it would actually create more instability having an election now than, you know, I think he just needs to stay in place, implement some of his plans, get the economy back on track, and then call an election, you know, maybe even as soon as 12 months time. You know, we just can't predict anything at the moment, as we've seen over the last few weeks. You know, it's almost impossible to predict things in politics. So yeah, I fully accept that that's what I said on Sunday, and I have since changed my mind on that. But on the point about the majority he has within the House of Commons, you know, the Conservative Party does have the majority of MPs in the House of Commons. He's got those in the government who will obviously support him. He'll have that payroll vote, and then he's got over 100, 150, well, over 200 MPs publicly backing him. And then there will, of course, be those who will have backed him but decided not to go public, just as there were the MPs who supported Boris Johnson but decided not to be public with it. And same with Penny Mordaunt as well last week. So, you know, he does command that majority. Yes, it might only be half the parliamentary party gone public, or just over half the parliamentary party, but fundamentally, he does have that majority. He can command the confidence of the House of Commons. And, you know, from that constitutional perspective, there isn't a need yet for a general election.
I think one thing that we can perhaps agree on is that this is, it feels like quite an exist, or has been a period of kind of existential crisis for the Conservative Party. And lots of people have suggested that politically and perhaps intellectually, the party have sort of exhausted themselves. I wonder, Nathan, is that how you feel? Because obviously it's been so jarring jumping from Boris Johnson then to Liz Truss with her sort of hard and fast economic agenda, and then reversing almost all of it immediately with now Jeremy Hunt as Chancellor. Do you feel that perhaps it is the time to spend some time out of power and sort of refinding the identity of the party, really?
I think there's certainly a case to be made to say that the Conservative Party could do with a spell in opposition. You know, this has been an incredibly trying time for the party, for members of parliament, for grassroots party members as well. And, you know, there are going to be huge difficulties and issues and debates that do need to be reconciled. And there are divisions that can only be healed with a period in opposition. As the Labour Party knows all too well, you have a leader like Jeremy Corbyn, and by being in opposition, you have the benefit of time to actually make those internal reforms and, you know, change the processes, etc., and, you know, create a more moderate party and a party that's much more electable. But whilst I do certainly see a case for having a stint in opposition, you also have to look and ask yourself the question, is the Labour Party ready for government yet? And, you know, taking a step back, not thinking about this party politically for a moment, but actually looking at the Labour Party front bench at the moment, looking at the calibre of the people they have in their shadow cabinet, front bench, I just don't see the Labour Party as being ready for government yet. And so that's why I'm not fully sold on this idea that we as the Conservative Party need that time in opposition, because I'm just not sure the alternative is ready yet.
Ollie, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously plain and simple. The vast majority of the Labour front bench don't have experienced time in power because Labour has been out of power for 12 years. I think that's a harsh criticism. And when you compare it to some of the cabinet positions that we've seen over the past 3 months, I mean, these people are exuding experience. So I think, yeah, I just wanted to pull you up on that one.
Go on, Jacob. Yeah. Oh, no, sorry. Do you want to reply to that, actually, Nathan?
Yes, I'll just reply quickly. I mean, yeah, it's a natural fact that the Labour Party has been in opposition for 12 years. As such, you know, MPs who were ministers in the Blair and Brown administrations or even earlier have since left the House of Commons and, you know, either gone on to other things or onto the House of Lords, whatever. But, you know, at the same time, you do have to look at whether or not they are presenting an image of whether or not they are ready for government, ready to take on the challenges ahead. And, you know, again, this is entirely a personal view, taking a step back from party politics for a moment. I just don't see that those on the Labour front bench at the moment, I just don't think they are ready for government yet.
Sorry to interrupt, but Rishi Sunak was a junior minister just a matter of years ago. This man's barely been in parliament. I mean, to criticise the Labour Party for being underprepared, you know, Keir Starmer's
And that was one of the reasons why I ended up voting for Liz Truss, because, you know, it was a meteoric rise for Rishi Sunak. I don't disagree with you there. It really was. But again, you just have to think about this as an overall approach. And I just don't see the Labour Party, the Labour front bench, ready for government yet. You know, again, you know, I've changed my mind on it, whether or not there should be a general election. Maybe I'll change my mind on that. But right now, I just don't see them ready to take government positions yet.
I'm just not entirely sure how you can look at someone like Rachel Reeves, for example, and see her as a less competent potential chancellor than the, is it four or five we've had this year? You know, Rachel Reeves has had the office since midway through last year, early last year, I want to say, my dates. But I think the fact that we've had this straightforward line that has been pretty unchanging over the last, you know, over the last year and a half, that's rolled with the punches and, of course, has developed in a policy angle, but we've had one person leading the Shadow Treasury team, is something that the Conservatives just cannot offer the country. In fact, they can't offer stability in any ministerial field. And I think it really is takes some serious confidence to say that Labour's looking less ready for government than a party that can't keep its own prime minister for 2 months.
I mean, Keir Starmer ran the prosecution service in this country. If that's not preparation to lead a government, I mean, I don't know what is. Since the Tories have been in power, we've had 10 education secretaries. I mean, these are people that cannot last longer than a month in a job. And frankly, they are all completely out of their depth.
Just, I want to give Nathan an opportunity to respond there, but I also want to ask you, Nathan, as well as responding just to what Jacob said before we wrap up, even though you were against, obviously you voted for Liz Truss, what can we expect from Rishi Sunak? What sort of policies are you expecting to sort of steady the ship, take away some of the anxiety from the markets? What are you sort of expecting?
Okay, well, firstly, just to respond to Jacob, I mean, you know, political parties, be it Conservative, Labour, they're a broad church. They have all sorts of people representing all sorts of wings of conservatism or socialism, left and right. So, you know, that's not to say I fully 100% agree with everything my party does. I think it's quite frankly outrageous that there have been so many education secretaries recently. And similarly, the fact that we've had, 10 housing ministers in as many years. You know, there are clear things that I disagree with, and you know, things that I would challenge if I had the opportunity to speak with the senior leadership. But as for the points about what we can expect from Rishi Sunak, on the economy, we can expect a much more cautious approach than Liz Truss was taking. We can expect a bigger role for the state in steadying the ship, so to speak, and Sunak and the Chancellor Jeremy Hunt certainly haven't ruled out any further tax rises. They've said that they're going to be looking at cutting departmental spending by between 10% and 15%, I believe. So, yeah, that's going back more towards an austerity direction. But on other issues away from the economy, Rishi Sunak's committed to replacing the online safety bill and changing the free speech implications that has, which is very welcome. Internationally, he's taking a more cautious approach on a rising China and you know, challenging them, calling out human rights issues there as well, which is welcome. And you know, it's not all doom and gloom at the moment, I don't think. And you know, whilst I do still have my reservations about him, looking at his track record, he does still have that free market approach. He's openly said he wants to bring tax cuts and broader deregulation to the economy, just wants it's in a more stable place. So he's not poles apart from Liz Truss. It's just about the approach. And at the moment, he's taking that more cautious, more, I suppose, small C conservative approach to the economy, whereas Liz Truss was going with a bolder, more radical plan.
Unfortunately, that's where we're going to have to end this discussion. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming on. No doubt, as expected, it was a passionate, one way of putting it, a discussion. But I know that our listeners will definitely benefit from hearing both the Labour and the Conservative sides. So thank you very much for all of you for coming on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Meridian Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed creating it. If you liked what you heard, why not subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts so our latest episode lands in your feed. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok too, at the Meridian Podcast. And if you've got an idea for an episode or would like to appear, send us an email at meridianpodcast@gmail.com. This episode was presented and edited by Michael Gorham and Amelia Hardy. The theme music is Impending Uncertainty by Gavin Luke and Solar Flare, licensed by Creative Commons. Until next time, thanks for listening.